ETC is go.
Pacifist is go.
ETC is go.
Copy, S is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comms is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Brightside Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. It's Tuesday night, the 12th of March, and welcome to it. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you?
I'm good. How's the brain freeze coming?
I'm sitting here eating ice cream, folks. Not frozen.
Well, that's good. That puts you a step ahead of Joe Biden.
That's true. He's not like a permanent brain freeze.
Yeah, of course, you know, Joe Biden can eat ice cream as fast as he wants and never get brain freeze, at least not that he would notice.
That's true. This is the best chocolate ice cream in the world.
In a couple of weeks, he's going to be hiding his own Easter eggs.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that going to be cute? Can you see him with the kids on the White House lawn?
You know, what was it, about 2 years ago, he was out there for the Easter egg thing, and he couldn't figure out how to get out of the yard, and the Easter bunny had to help him, literally.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Somebody dressed in an Easter bunny costume had to direct him and help him find his way off the lawn.
Well, this time it's going to be worse, because it's 2 years later, and he's gone down mentally even more than he was.
That's true. We got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, folks. Diane, you're covering the importance of down-ticket voting.
Yes, and after today's her report, down-ticket voting is more important than ever.
It really is. I'm going to be talking about the 9-0 meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
Got a little snark in that one.
Okay.
So we'll have some fun with that. Now, of course, you just mentioned it, and it's something we got to spend some time on this evening. But you and I both watched the Hur testimony. Robert Hur, special counsel, was testifying in the House today for what seemed like an eternity. I guess it went about 4 hours. Is that about right?
Just about. It sure felt that way.
Yeah. It was very interesting testimony. Nothing came as a great surprise to me. And I can say honestly, throughout the entire process, the liberals on that House committee kept trying to put forth that Joe Biden was 100% exonerated by the Hur report. And every time they put that line out there, Robert Hur shot him down.
Mm-hmm. Because the word exonerate is not even in the report.
Well, not only is the word not in the report, nothing in the report alluded to the fact that he was exonerated or 100% innocent. I don't care, you know, how you put it. You know, the report clearly said that he willfully and intentionally kept classified documents in his house and several other places. And that was one thing Robert Hur was not going to give in on today, no matter what the Democrats said. But, you know, some of those liberals on that panel, Jamie Raskin, for instance, and what's his name? Hank Johnson. Those people and Adam Schiff, they should be 100% ashamed of themselves the way they conducted themselves in this hearing.
So should, I think it was Sheila Jackson Lee.
Yeah, out of Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. I love how, well, two things really stuck out to me about this testimony. Number one, every time one of the Black Congress people came up and speak, and I'm not going to say everyone, but the ones that we know, you know, their names more, every one of them tried to paint President Trump as a segregationist.
Right.
Every single one of them. A white supremacist. I think that's the term Jackson Lee used. I'm not sure. Don't hold me to it that it was her, but one of them testifying did. And the others just try to lambaste him left and right. But the other thing I'm really convinced of, Robert Hurd, is he is a Republican. He really is a Republican. He's a registered Republican. He was appointed by Donald Trump, not as a special counsel, but as something. I think it was for Virginia.
Yeah.
Back in when Trump first took office. But I am convinced now, at this point in time, that he has become a never-Trumper.
And why do you think that?
By listening to the things he was saying about Trump, he made it clear he did not exonerate Joe Biden. But at the same time, he made it clear that Trump was guilty in his mind. Biden cooperated, turning over the documents was one thing. Trump did not. And he kept going back and forth what one did and what one didn't do.
Right.
And always the one who cooperated and all that was Biden. And the one who hid documents and this and that was always Trump. So it really just his whole demeanor led me to believe that now, for whatever reason, he's a never-Trumper. I could be wrong.
You know, I understand what you're saying. I kind of agree with it. It was hard to get a read on him. I will say this in Robert Hur's favor.
Mm-hmm.
His testimony today was probably the most competent and most clear cut of anybody I've seen testifying before a committee in the last 5 or 6 years.
I agree.
When they would ask him, when they would say, you know, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. These are going to be yes, no questions. He would answer yes or no. He never tried to filibuster an answer. He never tried to talk around an answer. And he was eminently familiar with everything. I mean, the only time he ever referred to notes was when he looked for a page reference to something that was being asked so he could tell them, well, you will find this on page whatever.
Right.
Other than that, he never had to refer to notes. He didn't have a giant binder in front of him that he was trying to read from. And, you know, quite frankly, that was kind of refreshing. The fact that he didn't try to eat up time with nonsense. He would just answer the questions.
Right. And you know, he did well when you take the which side is he on scenario out of it. He did very well. But the one who really impressed me today was Jim Jordan.
Yeah. Well, Jim Jordan, Congressman Jordan. He is perfect in that role, heading up that committee. I mean, nobody gets away with any nonsense when Jim Jordan's sitting in the main seat. His questions today were, I thought, brilliant. And, you know, his opening statement was also brilliant. I also liked James Comer in his yes. line of questioning. Daryl Issa, I thought, did a great job today. Issa out of California. You know, there were several. But, yeah, Jim Jordan really stood out.
Yeah, I mean, he put her on the hot seat. And her was able to, you know, stay pace with it and all that. But this whole report, here it is. They're all agreeing that Joe Biden, he's basically not all there anymore. And here we have the Democrats saying, don't say this, don't say that, whatever. But look at the contrast between how he was at the State of the Union and then listen to him the next day.
Yeah, I mean, that's like a night and day, black and white deal.
Yeah, the drugs wore off.
Well, I think we know who that loose cocaine in the White House belonged to now.
I would think so. But it was not that kind of drugs, no, folks. But, medically medicated.
Yeah, he was really jacked up, you know, yeah. for the State of the Union, yelling and shouting and talking a mile a minute and, you know, talking so fast he was slurring words. You know, the next day he's in Pennsylvania saying, send me to Congress and I'll take care of this abortion thing. Send you to Congress?
Yeah.
You know, and then he did this was interesting too. He did I almost hesitate to call it a town hall meeting, but it was supposedly some sort of a rally. There were actually more reporters in that room than there were voters in the room. Mm-hmm. And when he got done with whatever it was he was blathering on about and getting lost in, he turned to his handlers and said, is it okay if I take questions?
Yeah.
I mean, in the position he holds, he shouldn't have to ask permission. If he wants to take questions, take some damn questions. But he knows that he can't go without a teleprompter. He can't go off script, so he has to ask permission.
Right. Right. Well, you know who else was quite interesting? Mr. Schiff for Brains, as you call him.
Yeah.
He was interesting in the sense that he actually chastised Robert Herr, saying he made the wrong choice by writing about Biden's memory. Well, I'm sorry, when you're dealing with classified documents from years ago that he should not have been in possession of, you need to question his memory. When did you take them? Why did you take them? Where did you store them? Et cetera, et cetera. The whole point of the entire investigation was to show, basically, Biden did do what he's accused of, but because he's got dementia, if you will, we can't prosecute him. But they made an interesting analogy, and I forget which on our side made it, but they said, here it is, you had Hillary Clinton and her server and her bleach bed. You had all these other people doing this, 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 this. No one gets charged. No one has anything happened to them. No one's hauled off before court, whatever, except Trump. Only the Republicans have to actually answer for their actions.
Well, that highlights the two-tier system of justice we now have in this country. You know,
exactly.
And that's why that was brought up. I also found it very interesting, and you mentioned it, but I don't want to gloss over it, the fact that every single liberal on that panel, in that room today, totally, completely ignored the fact that Joe Biden was collecting those documents for over 40 years.
Yes.
When he was a senator and when he was the vice president, and as a senator or the vice president, you have access to top secret or classified documents, but you
right.
do not have any authority to remove them. And Biden
right.
was removing them for over 40 years.
Exactly.
You know, now several of the Republicans, of course, including Jim Jordan and Comer and Issa and a good handful of the others, kept drawing attention to that fact that Biden had no authority, none, to remove those documents from SCIFs or from archives or anything at the time he was doing it. But several of the liberals continued to say and point out that in the report, Biden said, "I haven't done anything that other presidents haven't done." Well, right. The difference is you weren't the president when you took those things.
Exactly. It doesn't carry over. Once you leave the office of president, you're not supposed to be taking these things anymore.
Yeah, but he wasn't the president.
That's what Biden was doing when he was entitled to certain things as secretary. I believe it was things that related to personal notes that he wrote. Right. And when you're vice president, you're entitled to certain things, but not to the degree that Biden took these things. And why he took them was clearly brought out. He took these things for his book deal that garnered him $8 million.
An $8 million advance.
Right.
And then he shared some of those with the ghostwriter, and he admitted it, and the ghostwriter admitted that he had those, you know, had a look at those documents.
And he destroyed a lot of the evidence.
Right. And he's not in trouble either.
No. What gets me is we went through all of this at a cost to we taxpayers. Honestly, it was a dog and pony show, because what's going to be done?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, there's really nothing they can do.
It's been a waste of time and money.
Yeah, there's nothing they can do at this point because they're not charging him. You know, the DOJ, according to the report, is not charging Biden because Biden's a daft old man.
I got a question, and
they couldn't get
you.
A conviction.
I got a question for you about that.
Okay,
a daft old man is not what we saw last week doing the State of the Union address. So if he could be like that, then the next day, you know, back to his bumbling self, why can't he be charged? Why did Robert Hurd decide not to charge him? He never gave an acceptable answer. He gave the answer that he's been giving all along. People would take pity on him, whatever.
Right.
That's not a reason not to charge somebody. Would you say that to a child molester?
No, but, you know, here's the way, let me answer the question. Okay. At the State of the Union, he was jacked up. I mean, let's just be honest. That was obvious. Okay. Mm-hmm. The next day, all those meds had worn off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now the liberals are saying, well, look at him at the State of the Union. He's vigorous and he's energetic and this and that. And he's fine. He's got no memory problem. Biden says he's got no memory problem. You know, he's just fine. During that State of the Union, I disagree that he was not a daft old man at that State of the Union. And here's why. The only time he went off script, the only time he did not read from the teleprompter was when he talked about Laken Riley, called her Laken Riley.
Yep.
And all of that, he was off the teleprompter and he screwed it up instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Even medicated, even when he had a pin in his hand that had Laken Riley's name on it, he couldn't get her name right.
Right.
So you take and the guy off script for 1 minute, he's lost.
Yeah. And that I'm sorry, that was an insult to her family, to her memory, everything else. But then again, this is what you get. If this had been George Floyd,
Oh, it would have been different.
You would have seen a whole different show there, folks.
Absolutely. Now, here's the thing. And Robert Hur admitted this. He talked about it because he was questioned about it, and he answered directly. You cannot charge or try a sitting president.
Right.
Okay. Which means if they were going to bring charges against Joe Biden, they'd have to wait till he's out of office, and he's going to be worse then than he is now.
Right.
Even though it's, you know, less than a year away, hopefully, he'll be worse off then. I think Hur had a good point. I don't necessarily 100% agree with it, but when he said, if you put him on trial, especially in Washington, D.C., they're going to see him as a daft old man. They're going to feel sorry for him. And it would be almost impossible to get a conviction. After the whole thing was over today, I heard Trey Gowdy, who I have a world of respect for. And Trey Gowdy said, given a trial situation, he said, I would, as a prosecutor, he said, I would rather go into court with the evidence against Joe Biden trying to get a win than with the evidence against Donald Trump, because that is far thinner than the evidence against Joe Biden. So I found that interesting, yeah. Too.
Yeah, that was very interesting. And you know what? You cannot second guess what a jury's going to do.
No.
Okay, but, you know, Hur came at the thing, well, you know, they're going to take it personally, people whose families have gone through this and that. But what they forget, what Hur especially forgets, is the damage that Biden has done to this country.
That's huge.
That will stick in people's minds. I don't care how they try to handpick the jury. All you have to say is the words inflation. All you have to say is gas prices, grocery prices, right. just simple words.
Right.
And people will forget the doddering old man aspect of it and
yeah.
Look at him for what he has actually done to help destroy this country.
The fact of the matter remains, in a trial situation, you wouldn't really be allowed to bring any of that other stuff up. You can only talk about what he's charged with. So
right.
there is that. But listen, we've got a few minutes left here, and I don't want to ignore this other topic that we've got set aside here for this segment. Bibi Netanyahu has flatly rejected Joe Biden's red line. And I think this is huge and good for Bibi Netanyahu.
I think so, too. Biden has no right whatsoever telling Netanyahu how he is to fight or not fight Hamas, which is, you know, a proxy for Iran. Israel is fighting for its very survival. There was a poll taken a few days ago by reporters that are covering the Gaza situation. And they came out with the number 65% of the Palestinians were in favor of what they did, Hamas did, on
right.
October 7th. 65%. So you know what? Let Bibi do whatever the hell he wants to do.
Yeah, I saw Bibi in an interview a couple of days ago, and he said that recently General Petraeus was over there, and he had met with General Petraeus, and Petraeus told Prime Minister Netanyahu that he should be congratulated on how he's, you know, handling this war. He said, I have never seen or heard of any country taking more precautions against collateral damage than what Israel is taking. You know, now you're not going to hear that kind of truth from the mainstream media because they hate Israel.
Right.
But, right. you know, when a guy like General Petraeus goes over there, a guy with that kind of experience goes over there and says something like that, you damn well better pay attention to what he's saying.
Well, you know what? In very simplistic terms, if you don't want collateral damage, don't go out and start a war.
Yeah, don't go sucking around for trouble unless you want trouble.
Right. And Israel, you know, wasn't going to take it. It's that plain and simple. And I still come back to the same fact of here it is, none of the Palestinians' fellow Arabs want them. There isn't one country, Arab country, that wants these people. Not one. That should tell you something right there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you know, Biden's still pushing for a two-state solution.
That's gone. The days of that's gone.
They had that. They had their two-state solution, but Hamas and the quote-unquote Palestinians wouldn't abide by it.
Right.
You know, and October 7th came along, and that put an end to that.
Right. Remember, October 6th, there was peace. October 7th, there was barbarism, savagery, and babies baked in ovens.
Yep.
I will never forget that video. That video is ingrained in my head.
That puts an end, as far as I'm concerned, to any two-state solution. And I think Prime Minister Netanyahu agrees with that because he said, literally, we will never allow Hamas to set up shop in our neighborhood again.
Right.
And good for him.
Right. And that's why I really think that the entirety of Gaza needs to be razed. Make it a security envelope, a no man's land, and let the fellow Arabs, especially Jordan, because these, remember the Palestinians, they are basically Jordanian DNA, Jordanian passports, Jordanian citizenship, because there is no Palestinian state. There never was.
Right.
This is all a figment of Yasser Arafat's imagination. Until the Arab states take responsibility for their own people, that area should be remain a no man's land. And as far as building the port, is Biden out of his frickin' mind?
That's rhetorical, well, yeah. Right?
That's rhetorical.
Okay.
We're going to build a port. Now, Biden, when he brought that up, he said, and no Americans will be on that soil. Really? How are they going to build it?
Yeah, I don't know. But in the couple of minutes that we've got left here, I've got a question for you.
Okay.
You're right, 100%, that none of the Arab countries want the so-called Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. However, the president of Mexico, El Sisi, has opened the gate and some refugees are going into Egypt. What is El Sisi, the president of Mexico, according to Joe Biden, going to do with them?
That's supposedly a temporary situation. And that they should be going back, according to El Sisi, to Gaza. But the problem is, by the time Israel is done with Gaza, and rightly so, it's going to be a rubble. It is going to literally take decades to rebuild that area.
Right.
And by the way, once Israel really starts flooding those tunnels, and they have done some flooding, but I mean massive flooding of the tunnels, the ground above it is going to be unstable to begin with.
Well, you would think.
Yeah.
You know,
that whole place just needs to be gone. Their fellow Arabs need to take them in and let them deal with it. But the problem is they don't want them.
That's my point. So what in the world is Egypt going to do with them?
I think they're going to find a way to get them out, but I don't know to where.
Yeah,
they're not going to Israel, that's for sure.
That's the question. So we got to keep an eye on that and a lot of other things. We'll probably have more to say on the whole Israel topic on Friday because it is Ramadan, and you know that means Rafah, the offensive in Rafah, is on the near horizon. About 30 minutes from now, I'm going to be talking about the 9-0 meltdown. But when we get back from this bottom of the hour break, Diane's got it with the importance of down ticket voting. Stay with us, folks. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi, guys. Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. If you miss any part of tonight's show, go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button, and have yourself a good time. All right, so a lot of people probably don't know it, but we do have an election coming up in November, the general election. And contrary to what a lot of people think, because, you know, if you listen to the mainstream media or anybody, really, for that matter, all they're talking about is the presidential tickets.
Right.
Okay. But there are other things on the ballot, and there are other people on the ballot, and you've put together an op-ed, The Importance of Down-Ticket Voting.
Okay. A few weeks ago, I wrote an article entitled Vote Wisely, America's Future Depends on It, basically laying out why, come this November, we must take nothing for granted. In said article, I not only spoke about the importance of voting in general, but about why taking back the White House, while important in its own right, does not negate the fact that taking back both houses of Congress and putting them into Republican-controlled hands is just as, if not more so, important than the actual presidency itself. Why so? I'll get into the specifics of that in a bit. So for now, simply stated, it's my opinion that this November's election should primarily be about the down-ticket ballot candidates and which party they belong to. For it's those very persons who will set the actual course that our country will be on for the next 4 long years. And no, it's no matter which man, sorry, Nikki, is elected president, as the all-important state and local levels matter as well. For successful change usually starts at the bottom and works its way up. And if we're not careful in how we vote, the course we're on now could remain unchanged for a generation or more to come. But first, some important, albeit brief, background information many of us learned in high school, while many others did not, as mandatory civics classes have now become few and far in between, most especially in blue states. So here let's start with the pecking order, if you will, beginning with the president himself or someday herself, including some civics 101 basics. While our duly elected president is both the head of state as well as deemed to be the head of the government, he, under Article 2, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution, is also the commander-in-chief of all U.S. armed forces, both in times of peace and in times of war. Also, under Article 2, Section 3, the president is responsible, quote, to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, end quote, meaning not just laws newly created and passed by Congress, but all laws that currently exist on the books, as well as his ability to sign bills into laws, holding the power of the veto, and making treaties with the approval of Congress. And while many deem the president to be all-powerful, actually, he is not, at least not in the classic sense. And it's all thanks to our system of checks and balances, a system most especially needed when it's in regards to monetary outlay. It's Congress itself, more precisely the House of Representatives, who holds the true monetary power, the purse strings, as it's more commonly known. And while the Senate has the power to try all impeachments, as well as their having the power to confirm presidential appointments that by law require consent, even here there is a check in place, as the House must approve appointments to the presidency. And that, Craig, is as well as any treaty involving foreign trade, as in the monetary outlay pertaining to any such trade agreement.
You know, those founders and framers were pretty smart and pretty far-sighted when they set up the separation of powers, you know, and they invested, you know, limited power in the presidency, but as a government of, by, and for the people, they put more power in the hands of those elected members that represent the people. Can you get a little bit more into that as far as what the occupant of the White House can do?
Sure. So while the president can propose and present an actual budget for federal agencies or suggest other legislation along with corresponding monetary funding if need be, remember only the House can actually make new laws or change existing laws, while at the same time they can pass or reject any proposed monies needed in the implementation of said laws. And while the president can still veto what has been passed if it's not to his liking, even his veto can be overturned with a two-thirds majority vote in both the House and the Senate, as per Article 1, Section 7 of the Constitution. What truly wise men our founders and framers were, to make sure that the greatest power would always reside within those elected to the House, the true voice of the people, and not with the president alone. And no, they did so that no one branch of our three branches of the government, as in the executive, the legislative, and the judicial branches, could ever try to set or to dominate the government discourse to their or to one party's liking alone. And this is key in regards to this November, for the fact remains that whomever is elected president will not really matter if both the House and the Senate are not in the hands of the party to which that president belongs. Executive orders, thankfully, can really only go so far, especially when in today's overly heated political climate, bipartisanship is a dirty word. In fact, it seems that true bipartisanship for the good of we the people, as well as for the good of our country instead of for the good of one party alone, has not been around since the Reagan-Tip O'Neill years, when in 1983, the Republican president and the Democrat House Speaker reached a Social Security compromise, a compromise that was far from perfect, but a true compromise nevertheless. Called the Social Security Reform Act of 1983, H.R. 1900. The Democrats, who had control of the House, got some things they wanted, while the Republicans, who controlled the Senate, got, courtesy of shared common ground, some things they wanted as well. And Craig said compromise led even harsh critics of the bill to state that the Social Security deal was a, quote, practical and bipartisan reform that had lasting positive impact on government and public policy.
You know, you really don't need to look any further than what we saw late last week when it came to the budget to see just how divided the House is. You know, this ongoing, seemingly perpetual situation with the budget is concerning.
It's very concerning. And, you know, I really wish, as I'm sure many of our listeners do too, that true common sense based bipartisanship was around today instead of the nonsense that always seems to engulf us. Nonsense like repeated stopgap funding bills to keep the Biden-led, Obama-wanted, failed government open, something akin to putting lipstick on the ever proverbial political pig. But here with our once again recently passed stopgap bill to temporarily fund the government, you see why down-ticket voting is important, especially in regards to the House's control of the purse strings, control which most definitely includes how our taxpayer dollars are spent. And with we Republicans currently holding such a slim lead in the House at best, we more times than not are having to face trying to convince some members of the other party why they should cross over in the name of bipartisanship. And with some House Republicans being but rhinos at best, losing their votes over personality clashes equates to yet another failure of the Republican Party to get done what they need to get done. But if the House was in complete Republican control by a sizable majority, things would be greatly different than they are today, even with Biden as president. So now for the specifics I alluded to at the beginning of this article, key of which is the fact, as I see it, that no matter if Trump wins or Biden wins, America and we the people lose. I cannot say it any plainer or more directly than that. Why so? Scenario one. If Donald Trump is able to pull off an election win, which at this point in time I believe can only happen if all Republicans rally around him, as well as the independents, if no election funny business was to take place, including not allowing illegals or dead people to vote, and if a good number of fed up with the economy and border fiasco Democrat crossovers were also to cast their vote for Trump, even then celebration would be but short-lived if we were to lose either the House or the Senate, or more likely both. And why so? Because 2022 proved that Trump-supported and or endorsed candidates did not fare well in their races. Remember, we barely took back the House and outright lost the Senate by 4 seats, even in the more competitive states, with some candidates not even wanting or were leery of Trump's support, especially in swing states. In other words, without the full Congress in Republican hands, and I mean via an overwhelming majority of numbers, without them to stand strong behind Trump, nothing, I repeat, nothing would get done. Even with Trump holding the power of the veto over the Democrats' heads. Why so, Craig? Simply because not only will the Democrats again call for Trump to be impeached, it's what Democrats relish in doing, but a Democrat-controlled Congress will easily be able to override any veto Trump would hand down. Trump might be president, but a politically impotent one at best.
Well, you know, it doesn't really matter how flat you make a pancake. A pancake has two sides. So what's the other side of the pancake you just described?
Okay, here's scenario number two, a somewhat simple reversal, if you will. If Joe Biden were to win in November, not only would Obama get his fourth term in office and more time to fundamentally transform America from within, a loss for our great republic in its own right, but Biden would also face a tit-for-tat Republican call for impeachment for obvious and rightful reasons. And yet he would still be able to push forward Obama's said transformation via a Democrat-controlled Congress, rubber-stamping his every whim. And this would happen even if the House technically stayed in Republican hands, because these past few years have shown that the Republican Party itself is far from being united behind the entirety of its ticket. And when Republicans overlook just how important the House and Senate races are to their agenda, they not only tend to lose some of what should be easily won races, but some much-needed House Republican votes, rhino votes, if you will, votes that are lost courtesy of some siding on certain unfortunate key issues like abortion, siding with the Democrats. And this is done way more times than Democrats crossing over to the Republican side. And once again, both we the people and our beloved America loses. Simply, Biden as president does not really have to fear Democrats switching to the Republican side regarding their vote, but Trump has to fear Republicans siding with Democrats on certain issues. Remember, not all Republicans are conservatives, nor are they all far to the right. While almost all Democrats march in lockstep with the hierarchy's wishes, together united in their leaning to the left. And this could only be negated if by some outside chance the Republicans took both the House and the Senate by enough numbers to override any Biden presidential veto he might issue. Translation regarding both scenarios, we the people and our republic lose no matter which of these two men becomes president, meaning the lesser of two evils becomes more important than ever this go round, especially when House and Senate seats are usually influenced by the turnout for the candidates in the presidential race. Get a top ticket person, not to the party, nor to one's personal liking, and even the thought of a down ticket ballot gets thrown by the wayside. In fact, voting history has shown that people in general tend to lose interest in the House and Senate races if they are truly unhappy with the top of their ticket. And this is especially telling now that this November's race, a race few Americans wanted, seems to be a losing proposition no matter who wins. But even if Trump were to pull off a win, with the chances of him solidly locking up the Republican ticket, as in the House and the Senate, seems highly unlikely at this point in time. So do think long and hard about the importance of voting a straight Republican line ticket, whether you like Trump or not, because to do otherwise might well mean our republic's demise. And that, I say, sadly, case closed.
You know, it's a very interesting op-ed, and it's something that, you know, you and I both have been harping on for a long, long, long time. You know, you've got to pay attention to the down ticket. You know, people get so wrapped up because all the headlines are being made by Biden and Trump. You know, but, you know, a lot of people, when they see their ballot, they go, oh, my congressman. You know, congressmen come up for a vote every 2 years. The Senate comes up every 6 years. And I think there's going to be a lot of people that, you know, get their ballot and they go, oh, I didn't know he or she was up for election. Because they don't hear anything about that, you know. And the idea that, we could take both the House and the Senate by a large enough margin to offset the rhinos, that's a pretty slim chance.
very slim chance. And that's the issue that Trump is facing. Because remember, original polls showed 72% of all voters did not want a rematch of this. Unfortunately, we have it. And most people don't like a lesser of two evils. But this lesser of two evils, it's a little bit different in this case because of the Senate and the House. You can have Biden as president and he could screech and holler all he wants. But if we controlled the House and the Senate, he ain't getting anything. And the same goes if Trump became president, but the Democrats controlled the House and the Senate, Trump ain't getting anything.
Right. And, you know, this is by far the most important election that we've ever seen in our lifetimes. And it's not just the top of the ticket. It's everybody on the ticket. It's exactly. Everybody on your ballot that matters.
We need a total shift to the right. And this is where the mistake was made, folks. But on our side, I don't care which other candidate anyone supported, but we needed someone that could serve 8 years, not someone who's going in as a lame duck for 4 years. And while he might get a few things done, and I'm sure he will, the VP suddenly becomes very important.
Absolutely.
Because that person has to be strong enough to possibly be the candidate for 2028. Because if a wishy-washy VP is picked, or a VP like one I personally can't stand, let's say someone who channels their inner Obama every chance they get, we can lose 2028.
You know, when you look at the possibility, you know, the different VP possibilities out there, there are some mm-hmm. that I can live with, and there's one,
yeah,
really, that I can't.
Me too.
You know, and I hope that's not the case, but... Mm-hmm. You know, even if that is the case, and I'll just go ahead and throw the name out there, Ramaswamy.
Right.
You know, even if Trump were to pick Ramaswamy, I would still vote for Trump and just hope upon hope that nothing happens in 4 years. But any way you look at it, and I don't really care at this point who he chooses as a VP pick, I see 2028 as another wide open Republican primary season. This is what disturbs me about it, is that when you put that many people on the stage running for that office, mm-hmm. especially in debates, you've got nothing but a circus.
See, and I don't think it's going to be that wild, because so many Republicans have said, we will support DeSantis in 2028. He needed to wait and let Trump have the 4 years, but we will support him in 2028. I see him being at the lead for 2028.
Well, and I think you're right, but nonetheless.
Right now, we've really got to concentrate here. And I'd like to give President Trump a little piece of advice. Because of the situation that you're in, and because a lot of people are going to be voting, you know, with the clothespin on their nose, we really need that independent vote. And there's only one person that can bring that vote in. And President Trump, if you or any in your family is listening, I really urge you to pick Tulsi Gabbard as your VP nominee.
I 100% agree, you know, with that. And, you know, you and I put up, you know, some little meme things on Facebook mm-hmm. to that effect. And, you know, we've gotten positive and both of us have gotten negative responses mm-hmm. to it. But I really believe Tulsi Gabbard at this point is the best person for the job.
Yes.
Plain and simple. Now, folks, before we get any further in this discussion, I want to tell you where you can get this op-ed, because I haven't done that yet.
Okay.
You can get The Importance of Down-Ticket Voting by Diane Sorey at her blog at thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com or by going to rspradio1.com. Either way, you can get the link, you can read the article for yourself, and hopefully you'll share it everywhere. People need to understand how important it is to go ahead and vote a straight Republican ticket.
Yeah.
Because every seat matters.
Every single seat.
You know,
I don't care, put your clothespin on your nose, and from top to bottom, you've got to pull that R ticket.
Now, tonight, there is a number of primaries going on. Joe Biden has wrapped up enough delegates for his nomination. That should come as no surprise. Whether or not they actually stick with him at the Democrat convention in July is another matter. You know, that's yet to be seen. Donald Trump could wrap up the Republican nomination tonight, and most likely will. I don't think there's really a question.
No, I don't think so either.
That he will, thus setting up the official rematch for the time being if Joe Biden remains on the ticket past the convention. Now, folks, that's no reason, just because the nominees have been chosen, that is no reason not to vote in your state's primary if your state's primary, like mine, hasn't come along yet because of the down-ticket voting. Now, you may have, let's say, a Republican that's being challenged by another Republican. The Republican in office today might be a rhino. And maybe whoever's running against them will take a firmer stand constitutionally and several other ways. So maybe you can primary a rhino out and get somebody in. Maybe the person that's running against the incumbent is the rhino, in which case you may want to keep who you've got now. So it's still important, regardless of the fact that both candidates have wrapped up or will have wrapped up their party's nominations by tonight. Don't let that stop you from down-ticket voting, even in the primaries.
Right. It's critical because, like I said, if Trump does win and we lose both houses, he's not going to get anything done. An impeachment, you will see an impeachment come so fast your head will spin.
Oh, yeah.
If Biden got elected and we again lose the House and the Senate, basically you can kiss our republic goodbye.
It's a mess, you know.
I don't say our democracy. I say our republic.
Well, we'll get you indoctrinated yet, so you'll say democracy.
Nope, won't happen.
Folks, go to Diane's blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com or rspradio1.com. Either way, grab the link to her op-ed this week, The Importance of Down-Ticket Voting, and then share it everywhere you can.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty simple. With that, we've hit the top of the hour. We need to take another quick break. When we come back, I'm going to go a wee bit snarky.
Just a wee bit.
Just a wee bit. You don't want to miss this, the 9-0 meltdown. We'll be back with more Right Side Patriots after this.
Hi, guys. Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. and join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey getting you through a Tuesday night edition of the show. And if you miss any part of it, as always, go to RSPRadio1.com in the morning, click the podcast button, and have at it.
Yes.
All right, so, you know, last week, the ruling came down from the Supreme Court, regarding the Colorado ballot situation. They were trying to kick Trump off the ballot. It's not just Colorado, and I'll get to that here in a minute. But I'm telling you, Diane, the meltdown from the left over the ruling was something to behold.
Yes, it was.
Led me to put together a rather snarky little commentary, the 9-0 meltdown. The gnashing of teeth and wadding of panties began immediately after the ruling by the Supreme Court last week, and it was as though liberals never saw it coming. I always expect histrionics from the liberals, especially in the mainstream media when things don't go their way, but the level of the Trump derangement syndrome amongst the propaganda media is now at an all-time high. They are terrified, and there are reasons for that. Their boy, the doddering old fool, Joe Biden, is only slightly more popular than Chlamydia, and Chlamydia Harris is polling at 28%. That's not good heading into an election, and the propagandists know it. They also know that if Biden was to run or make that shuffle on his record, he would have dropped out before the election cycle began, and people are seeing through his lies. Speaking of polling, in a recent survey by none other than the New York Times, those who voted for Trump in 2020, 97% say they intend to vote for him again. But of those who voted for Mr. Mumbles, only 83% say they'll vote for him in 2024, and 10% of the 2020 Biden voters say this time they're voting for Trump. The border is a disaster, and despite all the Bidenomics lies, people trust their bank accounts far more than they trust the propaganda, and they know they're not better off than they were when Trump was in office. And in spite of the lies from the White House press room and from the mainstream media, people can see with their own eyes that Joe is a cognitive and physical mess and thus incapable of even being Obama's puppet for another 4 years. Diane, liberal blue states are trying to do the desperate bidding of the DNC, but that's all falling apart too. The woke agenda and DEI are starting to crumble. Sanctuary cities and sanctuary states are at their breaking points, and the far fringe left is turning on Joe Biden.
Very true. So, you know, you have to wonder what's going to happen next, especially, you know, concerning those people that are on both sides, basically, of the Trump derangement syndrome.
Well, so what is left? Well, it's the courts, and that's why the Trump derangement syndrome is now on steroids. Their election interference court cases are not panning out the way they hoped they would. Yes, Trump got nailed in the Stormy Daniels case, but that's heading to an appeal, and it exposed the two-tier liberal system for all to see. Then there's the Fannie Willis and her bedroom lies in Atlantis. She could well be tossed from the case there, which means that her whole office would be off the case, and good luck finding another district to take up that case, given its weakness, and now that it's been tainted, or has the jury pool been tainted. That brings us to what happened in the Supreme Court last week and the resulting gnashing of teeth and wadding of panties. Let's start with Keith Olbermann. Here's Olbermann's post on X just moments after the ruling was revealed, and I quote, "The Supreme Court has betrayed democracy. Its members, including Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor, have proven themselves inept at reading comprehension, and collectively, the court has shown itself to be corrupt and illegitimate. It must be dissolved," unquote. Olbermann believes that since the court, all nine of them, voted constitutionally that they must be dissolved because they betrayed mob rule, which is exactly what democracy is. What we have is a constitutional republic, not a democracy. Somebody with the handle of Touch My Fallacy posted, quote, "All nine share the same interest. All nine are traitors and should be treated as the Constitution says traitors should be treated," unquote. So ignore what the Constitution says about the 14th Amendment, but follow it when the justices uphold the Constitution just because you slapped a false label on the SCOTUS? And Diane, that brings up a very interesting point. Several states, including Colorado, which was the case heard by the Supremes, were taking Trump off the ballot because they claim he engaged in an insurrection on January 6, 2021. Those states claim that because Trump engaged in an insurrection, he's ineligible to be on the ballot. Well, here's the part these panty-wadding liberals don't want to admit to, and would rather you frankly not know. President Trump neither engaged in or caused anyone else to engage in an insurrection. Not only that, he's never been charged with or convicted of insurrection.
Well, you know what? This whole thing with the Trump derangement syndrome has proven a very interesting things about what an accusation really means. Well, in today's liberal speak, I should say.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's you got to single that out. You've got to draw attention to that, you know. This whole insurrectionist thing is a false label. But to understand the level of TDS, Trump derangement syndrome, coming from the false label, one only needs to look back at the confirmation hearing for Justice Kavanaugh. According to the liberal justice system, an accusation against any Republican or conservative is the same thing as a conviction. Mm-hmm. In what is sure to be a failed attempt to educate indoctrinated liberals, Trump's impeachment in the House for insurrection was nothing but a partisan clown show and an accusation. In the trial in the Senate, he was acquitted, found not guilty, and the 14th Amendment was related to the Civil War. You liberals and Nikki Haley remember the Civil War. It was when Democrat Southern states wanted to keep slavery and then tried to leave the Union only to be thwarted by Republicans in the North and a Republican president, Abe Lincoln, who ended slavery. And to be clear, Joe Biden did not fight in the Civil War, but he did clean up after Jefferson Davis's horse. Okay, now, back to the liberal meltdown over last week's SCOTUS ruling. CNN's American-hating, Constitution-hating, and Trump-hating talking head, Dana Bash, said, quote, "Unfortunately for America, the court isn't necessarily wrong that this is the way the framers wanted it to be. They wanted Congress, the people who are the closest to their constituents, to be able to make the rules of the laws," unquote. Diane, imagine, just imagine believing that America is unfortunate because the Supreme Court followed the Constitution just as the founders and framers instructed. Imagine actually wanting the SCOTUS to ignore the Constitution in an effort to subvert the will of the people.
Well, you know, with all this monkey business going around with the Supreme Court and who did what and why did they vote this way or that way, isn't it interesting that the loons over at The View had a couple of things to say?
Oh, they always do, and none of it makes
sense.
Don't
they? Yeah.
At The View, those knotheads actually claim that having the case heard, okay, was a plot by conservative justices to help Trump. In other words, the mere accusation should have been enough to remove Trump from ballots state by liberal blue state, no court action needed. Then there was liberal social media influencer Harry Sisson, who chimed in and posted, quote, "Insurrection sympathizer Clarence Thomas ruled that insurrectionist Donald Trump can remain on the ballot in 2024. That should be the headline," unquote. Okay, Harry, the SCOTUS ruling on the Trump case regarding insurrection came down 9-0. That's a shutout, 9-0. If Justice Thomas is an insurrection sympathizer, as Harry claims, what about the other 8 justices? Are they all insurrection sympathizers? Or does Thomas have something on the liberal justices they don't want out there in the public domain? Did Justice Thomas sometime last week stroll into chambers and see Justice Kagan wearing women's clothes? MSNBC's Donna Edwards said, and again I quote, "Not since Bush v. Gore have we seen a court that's had this many opportunities to interfere in the election," unquote. But isn't that exactly what Donna Edwards and the rest of the liberal loons were hoping for? That the Supreme Court would interfere in the election by ignoring the Constitution and allowing individual states to kick their cognitively challenged challenger off the ballot? And then there was former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Diane, who said the court is separately placing itself on trial with its decision to hear the former president's total immunity claim, alluding to what is likely the next case against Trump that will come before the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, when Nancy gets involved in anything, you really have to wonder if maybe the Botox has sort of stiffened up her brain as well as her face.
You do. And listen, Nancy, it was your party's own pet special prosecutor, Jack Smith, who asked the Supreme Court not only to hear that case, but to expedite a hearing on that case. And now you want your fellow liberals, or I should say you and your fellow liberals, are peeing all over yourselves because the Supreme Court is about to do exactly what your side asked them to do? Isn't that rich? Again, in an attempt to educate the indoctrinated liberals who are nuttier than squirrel turds, the immunity case deals with the documents Trump had in what is surely the most secure private residence in our country, unlike the documents Joe Biden had in his garage at a home where his meth addicted kid and potentially hookers and foreign business associates were traipsing in and out of. According to the National Archives, those documents at Mar-a-Lago belong to them. But a good case could be made that Mar-a-Lago was more secure than the National Archives. Remember Sandy the burglar Berger, who strode into the National Archives and stuffed classified documents from the Clinton administration into his pants and down his socks and then just walked out the door?
Mm-hmm.
Also remember, the docs in Trump's home were from the time that he was the president, unlike those that Joe Biden stole for decades when he was a senator and the VP. Docs he had no right to remove from secured status. Joe wasn't charged, and neither was Hillary Clinton charged, for having classified docs on her private server and then destroying the subpoenaed evidence. I would not be one bit surprised if the SCOTUS finds that Trump did have immunity regarding the documents, but I suspect that ruling will either be 5-4 or 6-3, which will, of course, bring about yet another round of teeth-gnashing and panty-wadding from the left side of the political spectrum. Liberal efforts to derail the Trump train are falling apart as, with each attempt, Trump's poll numbers rise, and he's only, tonight away from collecting enough delegates to secure the Republican nomination. It's kind of like binge-watching Expedition Bigfoot, a bunch of so-called experts wandering around in the forest for 3 years, and no matter what they try, they just can't find Michelle Obama.
Oh, dear. The move.
A move.
Yeah. Can you imagine if at the last minute they throw her in?
You know, she came out last week out of the woods and said she's not doing it.
Right. She said she's not doing it. That's until her dear old hubby comes out and says, I need my fourth term to help destroy the country in total.
I mean, you know, you can't believe anything the Obamas say, so you can't put a lot of stock in the fact that, she said, no, I'm not going to come out and do it. I still think they're going to replace Biden. I really do. I don't think even the hierarchy after that farce of a State of the Union speech and then the stumbling and bumbling the very next day, I think they're looking at him going, we can't go on with this.
The thing is, they only care about what happened on that day, not the stumbling and bumbling, because they will shoot him up or whatever meds they're making him swallow for any appearances he has to make.
And I agree with you, but I think, you know, and that's the outward projection, right? I mean, that's what liberals in the mainstream media are saying. He's fine. He's fine. Look at that. He did fine. You know, and that's what elected liberals, you know, idiots like Nancy Pelosi and some of them, you know, oh, yeah, he's fine. He's fine. I think behind the scenes at the DNC, I think they're wringing their hands and I think they're actually sweating like Spice Girls on Jeopardy.
Well, you know what? You don't know what's going on with these people anymore. This is such a messed up government. And every time Fox or anyone calls Biden President Biden, the one thing I have never done is called him President Biden in my writing or speaking about him.
You and me both.
Yeah, is the fact that they keep, or they refuse to say, Biden is not running the government, Obama is.
That's true. You know,
these
Obama
are all
is running
the policies. This is all part of his transforming of America.
It is.
And here and there you might find a commentator who has the guts to say it. But even folks on Fox won't say it. They won't, you know, the illegals, even our news sources are no longer to be trusted.
I mean, you know, at best, Fox News calls the illegals illegal migrants or illegal immigrants.
They're migrants. They're not immigrants. They're illegal criminals. They're criminals by the very act of them coming here knowing they're breaking our laws.
At least they're not calling them newcomers.
Oh, please. That is the sickest thing
that's an
I've
insult.
Probably ever heard.
That's an insult, you know.
Yes.
I mean, it just is. But yeah, I mean, folks, you can share the laughs if you go to my blog, get the 9-0 meltdown. It's thenationalpatriot.com or go to rspradio1.com. Either way, you can get the link to the 9-0 meltdown and then share it everywhere. Share the fun, share the laugh, share the snark.
Yeah, in today's world, we need a little snark every once in a while.
You know, every once in a while, you just gotta have a laugh.
Yeah,
you know,
I liked Chlamydia Harris.
You know, that's
funny.
That's one of those things. You know, you just, I don't know. I don't know why I think that way, but I do.
Your mind's in the gutter.
Well, it is, but you know, it really, it's true. You know, his polling, Biden's polling is horrible.
Yes.
I mean, it's just horrible. And hers is worse. And that's why I think the Democrats, the liberals at the convention are going to pull a fast one and switch things up. Because I don't think at the DNC, it's like I said, I think they're wringing their hands right now. I think they're nervous. Because they know this guy isn't going to last another 4 years. They can see the slide as well as anybody. They can lie about it, and they can send, you know, Diane's favorite person, Karine Jean-Pierre, out there to the press room every day. And she'll deny, you know, she'll say, no, he's fine. He's fine. You saw him at the State of the Union. Yeah, we saw a hopped-up guy at the State of the Union. Mm. I mean, and let's be honest, you can't get that high on Red Bull.
No.
Okay.
No.
You know, everybody can see the slip. So I know at the DNC, they're seeing their nominee. He's got it wrapped up now. They can see their nominee is in free fall cognitively. They see it.
But I don't think when they do come time to replace him, I don't believe it's going to be Newsom. I don't know who it's going to be, but I'm almost positive it's not going to be Newsom.
And you could be right. I'm sticking with Newsom because I kind of think that's where it's headed. I mean, let's face it. Newsom was already at the White House a couple of years ago measuring for drapes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he went there.
He has destroyed California to such a degree that they don't want to lose California. And I think running Newsom, they could very well lose the state of California, you know, as far as the Electoral College.
But the liberals at the DNC, they look at California as the blueprint for the rest of the country. That's what they want to do.
We need.
Well, but you know it's true. You know they're looking at California going, yep, we got to do that to the whole rest of the country. You know, I mean, the point of it is, if they stay with Biden, okay, that means they're staying with Harris
and Obama. Mm-hmm.
Well, but given the idea that Biden probably can't last another 4 years at this rate of decline.
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, I'm not saying that he'll be dead in 4 years, but he will be totally dementia ridden and will need full time help.
Right. Given that scenario, they know that Chlamydia Harris is far worse than Joe Biden. She's just a cackling mess. They don't want her to be the heir apparent. They can't afford that. You know,
they got to
put somebody in Biden's spot. This is my thinking that stands a chance of being an 8-year candidate.
That's the important thing at this point, really, is the 8 years, the double presidency and the Congress. The president right now, whether it's Biden or Trump, without the control of Congress, we're sunk.
Well, I mean, if Trump wins, he's automatically a lame duck. If Biden right. wins, he's a dementia-ridden lame duck.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, those, true. You know, that's, you know, what it is. And I don't think over the DNC they can see Kamala Harris even being an effective puppet for Obama.
No, I don't think even the DNC wants her. Come on, let's be honest.
That's why I think they're going to wind up replacing Joe Biden at the convention, but time will tell.
Yeah, but who besides Newsom? Well, I really don't believe it will be Newsom. So who else will it be?
It's an open question, and it's a good one.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
No, they don't.
You know? All right, folks, here's the deal. You can get Diane's op-ed this week, The Importance of Down-Ticket Voting, by going to her blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com. You can get my commentary this week, The 9-to-Nothing Meltdown, by going to my blog, thenationalpatriot.com, or you can save yourself time, go to rspradio1.com, where you can find both links and share both of them.
Yes. And why don't we just leave our listeners with something that some people have been messaging me about. Facebook is not happy with Craig or me. We're not breaking community standards. They can't stop us. However, they have caused us problems with how we post the show. So if you see our posts and they seem a little short or abrupt or not as full as they've always been, it's because we're trying to outsmart Facebook.
Well, yeah.
The algorithm, yeah. I should say, which means we have to change wording every 5 to 10 posts.
Right. And folks, you can help us out with that. If you go onto Facebook or you go onto MeWe, and you see a post with the podcast, like the one we're going to put up tomorrow morning, and you see that it's the, here's the podcast from last night's show, share it. You know, just share it. Just you know, if it's in a group that you belong to and you see it, click the share button, put it up on your wall. That helps get the word out.
Yeah. Because you're not going to get the whole truth, even from people from Fox.
No, and I mean, we look at the bigger picture. You know, we're able to do things and say things that, you know, they can't or maybe won't on Fox News.
Right.
You get the unvarnished big picture from us.
Right.
You know, so if you share our post, if you share from our respective blogs or from rspradio1.com, or you share the posts you see from us at social media, it just helps get the word out. You may not agree with everything we say, okay? But there is a lot of common ground, whether you think so or not. And it just helps to get the word out.
Right. And that's the most important thing. Basically, we've got to get the numbers in November. We've got to vote.
Get out and vote. Vote, vote, vote. Vote early and vote often. No, wait a minute. That's the Liberals.
Don't
I'm
say
sorry.
That.
That's the Democrats.
Right.
But with that, Diane, you and I have run out of time for the show tonight.
Okay. Nighty-night, folks.
Folks, have yourselves a great rest of the week. We'll catch up with you again on Friday. Bye-bye.